You can now hear Film Actually on Stitcher Radio. Stitcher allows you to listen to your favorite shows directly on your iPhone, Android, BlackBerry, or WebOS device. The latest episode is always available for you. No syncing needed, no memory wasted. Don't have Stitcher? Download it for free today at Stitcher.com.
Look at that. Just look at that. Look at that scum. When I went through this academy, every cadet was the right weight, the right height, the right color, and they all had Johnson's, Lassard. Every single one of them.
Johnson's?
You know.
Oh, yes.
Back in the old days, there were Johnson's as far as the eye could see.
And what a lovely sight it was.
It'll be much less terrifying if you just come to me.
This man's got nerves.
Make love in the hammock.
Good.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Film Actually, episode 62 for the 29th of October, 2011. I am Dave McVeigh, and I am joined by Josh Philpott. How are you, Josh?
I'm good. Oh, well, there we go. There.
It's automated, dude. It'll just happen.
Yep, it just happens. Well, I'm good, Dave. I'm good. It's weird starting later because the energy levels are different. It's like I'm feeling like I'm peaking right now, but I know we've got a whole show ahead of us.
Yeah, don't peak too soon, dude. Yeah. That's what she said.
Moving anyway. On.
And in the middle, Richard Gray, how are you?
Bitchy.
bit sandwiched there in the middle, huh, bitchy? Dude?
I'm the rose between two thorns.
This is Film Actually, the official movie podcast of geekactually.com. This week we review Nicholas Winding Refn's new film, Drive. We also explore a little entertainment news, including Spielberg. Who talked a little bit about Indy 5 and Jurassic Park 4. No! But actually, wait till you hear what he had to say. It's kind of fun. Joss Whedon's new film, and no, we don't mean The Avengers. No. He seems to have mastered the time-space continuum and has produced another one somewhere along the way. And we also have a host of new trailers. Now, we actually had Piranha 3DD, The Muppets, the last of the parody trailers, which I think is great. We have to show it. And we also have The Lorax. We may drop The Lorax because this morning another trailer turned up and it may take... We'll see how we go for time. If we have time, we'll do all four. But if we don't have time, we'll drop The Lorax because the new Mission Impossible trailer hit this morning. So, and I think that's...
Well, you have to do it.
We have to do it. So, we also have a brand new list of five of our favorite movie vehicles. We're doing a film called Drive. How can you not do something about vehicles?
Totally.
So, so this is not actually the movies themselves, but the vehicles, whether it flies or skis or snows or goes in the water or whatever it might be, which ones do we love? So we'll do five of those a little bit later on. We do record Film Actually live every Saturday starting at approximately 1:30 p.m. Not this week because we actually started the entire thing an hour late today. So it's all a little bit out of whack. But normally about the 1:30 p.m. mark, Australian Eastern Daylight Savings Time, UTC plus 11, geekactually.com/live is where you go and you can come and join the chat room. It's a lot of fun. Okay, Delta Knight in our chat room, speaking of chat rooms, says, "Arrgh, I'm sick of the Mission Impossible trailer. I see it every time I go to the movies and I hate it. This is the new one. It literally came out today." So have a look at it. We'll have a look at it a little bit later on. But we like to start this show with a little section we call What We've Been Watching. And I have to ask, what have you guys been watching this week? Josh?
What have I been watching? Honestly, Dave, it's been another one of those weeks. It's that time of year, and Raw DLC has suffered because of it, unfortunately, where it's the biggest game time of the year, and all three of us have been basically doing nothing but gaming. We all have reviews due, and they all, unfortunately, are on games that need to be finished, and the problem is this is the section of time when you get all these games that come out that don't finish in 5 hours, they finish in 60. So I have literally done nothing but sleep and game over this entire week.
Fair enough. No,
sorry,
that's fair enough.
Nothing to report.
That's the problem with having three hosts that all do three separate websites as well. We all have our own thing. We kind of come together every week to do this show, but sometimes...
Exactly.
schedules conflict.
Absolutely.
Richard, what have you been watching this week?
Yeah, I've got longed a few. I saw less than I intended to because I sort of had got halfway through the week and thought, you know what, I'm meant to be seeing a screening every night and it's just not possible sometimes.
No, I agree. I've actually declined a few this week.
Yeah, as have I. But I still got along to see a few really good ones. We'll talk about it a bit in a minute, but I saw Warrior with you.
Yes.
Last weekend, just right off the show, in fact. I also saw on Monday a film that you guys might be interested in, Don't Be Afraid of the Dark.
I'm dying to see this.
Which is produced by Guillermo del Toro. The name of the director escapes me for the moment. It's a remake of the... you've got the director right there.
I have the card. Let me see here. Hold on a second. It's printed so small I can't read it.
Anyway, you can look that up.
Now, before you go any further, though, I would like to point out we were offering 2 free double passes last week. Nobody entered.
And you really should, because...
What is wrong with you people? Get your emails in.
It's a good film. Go and see it.
So we still have these 2 double passes, so same rules apply. Send us emails, feedback@filmactually.com. We have 2 double passes that we want to give away to you people. All you have to do is email us.
Free.
We're going to take away the 1st and 5th emails, all that stuff. First 2 people to email me from Monday, not today, but from Monday, you email me. The competition will close on Friday of next week, so get your emails. First 2 in the door will win these 2 double passes. All you have to do, email me your mailing address and I will send them out to you. Okay. Nice. All right, continue.
So yeah, look, it's a remake. As you know, it was a television movie originally, is that right?
It was originally a 70s telemovie. But he says, but I'm in Perth, though. These are double passes that work everywhere.
Nationally.
They're nationally. They're just national.
Absolutely,
free
national
tickets.
And the movie's quite good. I mean, it stars Guy Pearce and... Katie Holmes.
Chris from Bris Vegas says he didn't enter because he read the reviews.
Well, that's right. Look, the thing is, it's one of those movies that horror movies usually have one fatal flaw. Either that they're stupid or that it reveals something that shouldn't be revealed, like, you know, and the mystery element's taken away from it. I think it does do that a little too early in this film, but before it does that, it's a fucking awesome Afraid of the Dark kind of film, you know.
The TV movie wasn't perfect, but it was kind of spooky, and I just thought, with a modern retake, Guillermo del Toro is kind of faithful to that sort of stuff.
There were moments when I actually cringed in it. It was great to see Gary McDonald. Those of you who are Australians will know Gary McDonald was Norman Gunston. He appears in a pre-credit sequence, which is really, really cool and one of the creepiest things in the whole film. So get along and see it. I think make your own mind up. It is still worth a look. I then went home for some reason and watched, sort of to keep in the spirit of this week's theme, License to Drive.
I love License to Drive.
The movie, I really didn't. It was
I haven't seen it since the 80s, but I remember seeing it back then, thinking it was really funny.
It is such a terrible film, but it has got one of the earliest appearances of Heather Graham when she was actually 17 and not just playing 17 for the next 20 years.
She's got a painting in her attic, though, because she's never really changed.
She's not aged. Like, played, like, I think it was 12 years later almost, or maybe it was 10 years later, Boogie Nights. She played the age that she was actually in that film, and she looked the same, if not younger, somehow. It was amazing. Yeah, but the film itself is pretty.
I always
crappy.
Remember the drunk driver starts spreading the news.
there are good moments in it, but it just sort of boring. The other film that I saw this week, I'll mention really quickly, is The Debt, which has taken forever to get out here.
I saw a trailer for that last
night.
This
is John Madden is the director. This stars Helen Mirren, so that's reason enough to watch it. Helen Mirren, Kieran Hines, and Tom Wilkinson, and their younger counterparts are Sam Worthington, who actually does an okay job in this.
Oh my God.
I know. He still kind of does a broody thing, but it's all right. Sam Worthington, I've forgotten the other male counterpart, and Jessica Chastain, who is in every movie this year. She was in The Help, she was in Tree of Life, she was in Take Shelter. Right. She is one to watch because she's going
to
be huge.
Well, apparently we have to because she's in everything.
Yeah, she is. No, you won't be able to miss it. But she's so hot right now, and she is quite hot, actually.
Oh, okay, cool.
But watch it. Look, it's a good movie. It's kind of, I described it flippantly as Munich meets Red.
Oh, wow. That sounds good. No, I like that. I like that. The trailer actually looks a lot like that as well. Yeah. So, you know, I want to see that. I do want to see it. I actually got invited to the screening for that, and I couldn't make it. And I can't remember why I couldn't make it, but I couldn't make it.
I almost didn't because it was at the Universal Theatre right here in Sydney, which is a bugger to find, people.
Oh, the Universal Theatre. The first time I went to there was Tinker Tailor Soldier Spy, and it was like you have to like catch a train and then walk and then catch a bus and then you need a Sherpa.
Basically,
and then you go
if you're looking if you're looking for Universal and you're in Sydney, go to the Rocks and turn left. And then just keep walking.
And then get a Sherpa and you then need get a compass and you'll need to take bottled water with you.
If I didn't have my iPhone with me.
Bottled water.
Yeah. If I didn't have my iPhone with me, I would have been lost completely.
Oh, no, it's terrible. I actually, when I went there, luckily ran into somebody who was also going, who knew where it was. Because after walking I went, I would never have found this. You know, it's terrible. Is that all?
That's it.
Okay. This week, I also saw Warrior. We'll talk about that in just 1 second because we'll just give a brief rundown on Warrior. But along with that, I watched the opening clip, the 1984 Police Academy, the original, which, forget all the sequels. The sequels just progressively got worse and worse and worse. The first Police Academy still stands as a really funny film. It's really funny characters, really funny situation, and just genuinely good humor. And that scene with the hooker under the podium still packs a punch.
Me in this film have a lot of history because I jokingly said something. I kept talking about, well, on the old DVD Bits website, I kept talking about Police Academy movies for ages. And when the box set came out, I kept joking to my editor at the time, I want that box set. You're getting me the box set. And true to his word, he did. He got it. And I reviewed all 8 movies back to back.
You know, to this day, I still don't think I've ever seen. I don't think I've seen the 7th or 8th.
It's probably not worth seeing. Is it 8 or maybe it's only 7 movies?
No. I think it's 6 movies actually, and it's the last one was Mission to Moscow or something like that, which I never bothered to watch.
Yeah, so. I'm pretty sure there's. I'm almost positive there's 7, but they do get pretty, in the middle though. They're 3 and 4 are kind of fun. One of them has Kim Cattrall in it, I think.
First one has Kim Cattrall.
Maybe it's the first one that has Kim Cattrall. Yeah. I can't remember. The third one... No, the third one has Sharon Stone in it.
The first one has Kim Cattrall, and the second one was the world's introduction, basically, to Bobcat Goldthwait.
That's right. And I remember the fifth one is Mission to Miami, which I'll always have a soft spot for. Don't ask me why. but I got so associated with these films on the site that I had a bit of hate mail for another review that I wrote. Clearly, I didn't agree with this person's point of view. That started with, hey, Police Academy boy.
The other thing I watched this week, which I thought I would bring up very quickly, is I watched Beastly, which is the redo, basically modern retake Twilight type remake of Beauty and the Beast, with Vanessa Hudgens, and it is friggin' awful. It's just a warning. Even Neil Patrick Harris, who stars in it, couldn't save this film.
Wow.
It is a really, I mean, Neil Patrick Harris is fun, but he's pointless. And
Neil Patrick Harris and Vanessa Hudgens.
I know. Wow. And my lovely wife, Katie, and I watched it together, and I think she was one who basically said, she's just so nothing. Why is she a star? You know?
Yeah.
And she looks like, quite frankly, she looks either stoned or sleepy the entire film. Her eyes are half closed. She's got Chinese eyes the whole time. You know, when I mean, I'm not Chinese as in to be racial, but you know, that stoner half eyes closed look that they get.
Yeah.
She looks like that the entire way through the film. And you sit there and go, boy, you are either drug fucked. It's the only way you could get through this film, you know?
It was the same in Sucker Punch. She looked.
Yeah, she did. Yeah. She actually looks a lot like she did in Sucker Punch.
Mm.
It's a beastly movie. What can I tell you? It's pretty ordinary. The other thing I wanted to bring up this week was I saw Tucker and Dale versus Evil, which I had been wanting to see for an awfully long time. And I finally got a chance to see it. It's finally come out on DVD in this country. And I finally got a chance to see it, and I absolutely freaking love this film. It's not a perfect film, it's not a masterpiece of filmmaking, but it is very funny and it's very clever, and it's basically, as Josh said, it takes one joke and manages to stretch that out over an hour and a half by just escalating the joke all the way through it. And I think the star of this film is definitely, his name has escaped me,
Guy who's not Alan Tudyk.
No, the guy who's not, Dale is the star of the film.
Reaper, isn't he?
He was the star, one of the stars of Reaper. He is, and in Reaper, he started to outstay his welcome as a comic performer. I thought, you're kind of one note. He is very funny as Dale. He's really sweet. And you can there's almost a believability to the fact that she would fall in love with him because he's just a big teddy bear.
Tyler Labine.
Thank you. That's his name. This is a director who I think we need to keep our eyes on. Eli
Craig
is a director we need to keep our eyes open for because this is his first film. And it's quite a debut, I think.
And it's sat on the shelf forever. It's got a 2010... date on an Instant Movie Database. It might even predate. I saw it at the Sydney Film Festival. It was like one of the first times it had been screened outside of Canada. for 18 months.
Well, and in America, it actually bypassed cinemas and went to video on demand.
Absolutely. And we actually got, we were really lucky here in Australia. We don't often get this. We got a brief cinema run
of
this Icon brought it out. So kudos to them.
Kudos, because it is, look, it's well worth having a look at. If you've ever seen the cover and thought, what the hell is that? This is a parody of 80s horror movies.
I mean, oh, and the posters don't do it justice.
No,
at all.
Not at all. Now, Josh, I believe you had a slightly different opinion on this.
Yeah, look, I just felt the joke stretched on too long. I felt that I got to the point with it where I was just like, I understand what you're doing, but this is just getting outrageous. Like, I just don't believe any of this anymore.
Right.
And I mean, I know that's a stupid statement considering it's not exactly a very believable movie in general. No, I think for me, what I was really enjoying about the film was the way that they were shooting the differences between the two sides of what happens.
Yeah.
And the fact that...
It's very Rashomon-like.
Well, I love the fact that when you're actually dealing with the kids and you're not dealing with Tucker and Dale, they are playing the roles exactly how you would see people play horror movie roles from that generation. And then you flip back to them and they're just completely normal.
And they're completely nice guys. Yeah.
Exactly. And it's like, it's sort of as you go through, the joke just started to wear on a little bit.
Delta Knights asked in the chat room, what's the movie called again? Tucker and Dale versus Evil. Is the name of the film. And look, I recommend it. Even with Josh saying, you know, the joke where he's like, do have a look at it. Don't worry about closing it. She knows to be quiet back there. It's okay. Sorry, it's going to get hot in the studio, and my lovely wife Katie has just come home from shopping, but I did tell her that we're going to have the door open. So
it's going to get hot in here because it's three awesome.
It's three awesome men. Now, the other film we did see this week was Warrior.
Yes.
And we should talk about this very briefly, and then we'll move on to our feature review. Warrior is the new film with Tom Hardy and Joel Edgerton about the...
Very interested to see your guys' opinions.
And Nick Nolte.
Did you see it in the end, Josh?
No.
No. It is... And Nick Nolte, of course. Nick Nolte is already there. People are saying, oh, he's, you know, supporting actor, Oscar nominated. I didn't think he was great. He was okay.
You know, the one thing I'd say about this film that really lets it down are the characters.
Yeah. Look, I found the whole film very broody, and you kind of get to a point by the end of it where you just go, I don't care about any of you. And because I don't care about any of you, why do I care? The stakes aren't high enough because I don't care.
No, spot on. I think I said the same thing in my review. It was basically the boxing formula, except boxing so passé now, so it has to be MMA.
So anyway, yeah, mixed martial arts,
and which look, I didn't quite understand as well. I know that sounds weird, but I didn't really get the rules. There was somebody with a wooden blocks at one point. It's like, don't they have bells? But they had the little.
But then the bell goes off, so they have bells.
But they had the bell, but they also had wooden blocks to signify the end of rounds, and they also had the girl with the giant beach ball that had round one, round two, round three that she threw out. I don't know how many of those beach balls they went through, but that aside, I mean that's basically your standard sports film kind of stuff there, and it didn't really rise above that.
Mm.
The performances were fine, but the characters were so underwritten that the only character I thought was interesting was the wife.
Yeah, she lost me because there's a turning point in the film, and this is minor spoilers, but there's a turning point where she basically says, I'm not going to watch you fight like this all. I can't watch you be beaten up.
Until you win.
And then she's sitting there by the phone basically after round one. She gets the call saying, I won, and suddenly she starts cheering next thing she's at the fight, and she's watching. So it's like she wasn't willing to watch him go lose. Get beaten up, but if he's winning, that's okay. You know, it's like... And at that point you just go, well, you just completely you completely lost me on the character because all realism went out the window.
There is one wonderful scene in the film where Nick Nolte plays a recovering alcoholic.
Yeah.
And obviously he's done some bad things in the past to his children because both of them have moved away. Tom Hardy's character is incredibly bitter about this. Mm. And then... But he's the one that has the closest relationship with his father throughout this film because his father's training him for the thing. At one point, Tom Hardy just says something that, you know, one of those things that you can't take back.
It's the trigger.
It's the trigger. You know, Nick Nolte goes on or off the wagon. I can never remember which one. And there's this wonderful scene where Nick Nolte's just, as a bear of a man, just losing his shit in the hotel room. And then this beautiful moment at the end where for the first time you see, minor spoiler, it's Tom Hardy just cradling Nick Nolte and not a word is said. And it's just a nice moment because I keep hitting the microphone. It's just a nice moment because it gives you a hint as to what leads to Tom Hardy's ultimate decision at the end of the film. unfortunately, it's the only hint because you get no sense of this character whatsoever.
Mm.
And maybe he's meant to be a bit enigmatic, but I don't.
And my feeling was it was a little. It was too little, too late.
Exactly.
And that was the problem, was the fact that you don't care about any of these characters. They're all holding on to grudges. I mean, as an example, I mean, Nick Nolte is going out of his way to try and mend things. He's given up drinking. He hasn't had a drink in 1,000 days or something like that. Yeah. He's constantly going out of his way. He's taken up reading the Bible. He's, you know, I mean, basically he's apologizing to them right, left, and center.
He's training his son who doesn't stop insulting him.
All he wants to do is see his grandkids. He's really going out of his way to try and make amends. And these two boys are so blinded by this hatred of something that happened that you never find out.
No.
Well, you kind of do, but you get hints about it. But there's no feeling that there's ever going to be a resolution to this. They're so unwilling to bend, even to each other, that you just sit there and go, "You're all just so mean to each other. You're all jerks. I don't care anymore." You know.
Yeah.
And I said to Richard, I said, "When you finish a film like this and you have more questions than answers, you've got a problem because there was I came out going, but you know, and it's like I just wanted to ask all these questions about what actually happened, including the rules to the event. This was a big criticism that was leveled against Invictus when it came out because the Americans didn't understand rugby and they didn't bother to explain it all. So they're just playing rugby, and the Americans are sitting there going, "What sport are they playing? I don't understand the rules here." And it's kind of the same with the MME. If, unless you are familiar with the MME.
MMA,
it will just leave you cold because you sit there when you just start thinking you got a handle on it. Somebody starts padding and they go, "Oh yes, he's a winner," and you go, "What? How? What just happened at that point?"
Look, as far as I can understand it, it's two people beating the shit out of each other any way they can,
and you can resign from the fight by patting the guy on the shoulder or something like that. Yeah. So and you know, we kind of work out, but the rounds and the film is so shoddily edited that all the rounds seem to be different lengths, and so they'll start one fight and it's over like that. The bell rings and you go, "Oh, he survived round one," and you go, "Okay, that seemed very short." And another round that'll go on for 5 minutes.
Hmm.
And you sit there and go, and that's not a problem with the sport. That's a problem with the editing of this film, is we have no continuity in the fights.
Speaking of editing, this movie goes for 140 minutes.
Yes.
And still the characters weren't developed.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know,
that's a problem.
And look, and it's not a terrible film. It's not like one of those films where you sit there and go, "Oh, it's just such a shitty film, I'll never see it again." It's not a terrible film. It's just not a great film, and it just it could have been so much better. And I think that is with another finesse pass on that script, you could have made something out of that.
Report card: must try harder.
Must try harder. You have the talent; you just needed the writing. So, and I think it really was what it comes down to. All right, so let's get on to a feature review. So the bottom line is just save your money.
Okay.
Yeah.
Didn't plan to. That review did not give it any shining graces.
All right. So, did anybody get a chance to see In Time this week?
No, I haven't actually. I might see it tomorrow.
Okay, we will report back if we see it. It's one I wanted to see and I couldn't make the screening, unfortunately.
Well, unfortunately,
I had a job interview. Well, so.
And I couldn't make the screening because I work full time, and both the screenings were on during the day before the film came out.
Yeah,
not a good sign.
I've read some interesting reviews on it so far. Mixed. It's a mixed bag. So I am curious to see it. Drive. Our feature review this week is directed by Nicholas Winding Refn and written by Hossein Amini, based on the book by James Salas. Stars Ryan Gosling, Carey Mulligan, Bryan Cranston, Albert Brooks, Christina Hendricks, and Ron Perlman. Carey Mulligan's lovely. Ryan Gosling. Now, I've actually taken this as Film District's official synopsis, which I have abridged because it was very long, so I shortened it down. Ryan Gosling stars as a wheelman for hire, stunt driver for movie productions by day, and steering getaway vehicles for armed heists by night. Though a loner by nature, Driver can't help falling in love with his beautiful neighbor, Irene. After a heist intended to pay off Irene's ex-husband's protection money spins unpredictably out of control, Driver finds himself driving defense for the girl he loves, tailgated by a syndicate of deadly serious criminals. See what they did there? See what they did with it?
You thought that was worth using as the thing.
It's theirs. I always try and use the official if I can. Yeah. If that had been written by Anonymous on IMDb, we would have skipped it and found something else. But that's theirs. This is what they're... And it was worse, Josh. I cut half of it down.
No wonder they got sued.
All right. Here's the trailer. Have a look at this, and we'll come back and talk about this. Where's my mouse going? There it is. And then we'll
that's
come
back. That's what she said.
You guys are terrible.
Damn, it's not me. Don't be.
All right, here is Drive.
If I drive for you, you give me a time and a place. I give you a 5-minute window. Anything happens in that 5 minutes and I'm yours, no matter what. I don't sit in while you're running it down. I don't carry a gun. I drive.
So you just moved to LA?
No, I've been here for a while.
What do you do?
I drive for movies.
Is that dangerous?
It's only part-time.
You put this kid behind the wheel, there's nothing he can't do.
Kid, I want you to meet Mr. Bernie Rose.
My hands are a little dirty.
So am I.
My husband is coming home.
Where is he?
He's in prison.
There's some guys that want me to do a job for him, and I'm not going to do it. What is that you got there? One of those men gave you that? What's the job? When you get your money, his debt's paid. You never go near his family again. Did you have any idea there'd be a second car?
He said there'd be another car to hold us up.
Whose money do I have?
I'm gonna tell you something. Anybody finds out, we're both dead.
That's why this driver's gotta go, Bernie. He's gotta go.
Remember this?
No.
Any dreams you have or plans for your future, I think you're going to have to put that on hold. For the rest of your life, you're going to be looking over your shoulder.
Okay, now, I think Josh has been talking this film up a lot. I think Josh should start.
Well, I mean, my review is up on the website. You can all feel free to check that one out if you would like to. But essentially, I think the core of this film hits me very, very clearly and very powerfully. And I have to say this is probably one of my favorite films of the year. And it is up there as one of my favorite films because there's always a mental list you have. As a person, you have a list of films that you really like, and when people want to start a conversation with you about film, you put these films forward that kind of like are films that you really connected with and you would like people to know that you like. And this is one of those films for me. It's like there is so much about the film that I like. I like the way it's shot. I like the way that they handle scenes. I really like... I told a half-line in my review and said that I haven't really been following Ryan Gosling. Not 100% true. I've been following him, but I've always looked at him and been like, dude, you could do so much better, you know? And I've always kind of had that feeling along the way that I was like, this guy just needs a few roles where he plays a really good actor in a really good setting that isn't just either love films or just whatever else he can find. Like, it always felt like he was just in there because they were like, well, we can't find the guy we want, so here's Ryan Gosling. And this film sees him playing a very unique character. And I've talked about the character all week as very iconic for me. It's the jacket. It's his nature. It's the fact that he was told by the director that he is not allowed to give off any other emotion apart from love, and everything else has to be downplayed and panned, and that comes through very nicely, in my opinion. I think Carey Mulligan, who both me and Richard love, is just adorable.
I think
in this
love
film.
Is downplaying it a little. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay. Well, I'll let you fill that in when we get to you on this. I think if any fault after seeing this twice that I would give the film is I think the third act starts to slow down a bit, and it is building towards the crescendo, but I think the crescendo suffers a bit. I think that that's where it kind of falls off into that territory that you get a lot of films that become cult classics become, where it's like it all becomes available to interpretation. Like something that I noticed on a second viewing towards the end is there's a scene right at the end where his character sits still for a very long time and then drives off. And there's multiple different possibilities that you could take out of what that moment essentially means.
Mm.
And off camera, I will discuss with people about that. But essentially, there's a lot of people kind of walking out going, so does that mean, or did it mean? And of course, Winding Refn. Is one of those directors that this film almost feels not out of his depth, but a very different kind of film to what he's usually kind of doing.
It's a lot more stylized
than it's a lot more stylized now. And it's a lot less violent, apparently, than a lot of his films. Yeah. So,
Though there is some extreme violence.
Oh,
in this film,
yes. Yeah. And just for those people out there that are planning to sue the company, we're giving you the preface this time. It is not Fast and the Furious in any way or form. And should not really be labeled in that way. I understand that. Look, I mean, it's doing quite well on IMDb. It's got something like is it still 8.5?
It's like 90% on Rotten Tomatoes.
Exactly. And I can see why, but I can also see there are some people that found a few issues with it. And I get that. And, you know, whatever people, you know, want to say about this movie, fine. It's one of those films that I can personally vouch for, and I'm yet to meet anyone that has a thing against it that I take on consideration and affects my opinion of the film. So because of that, it's a very robust film in my eyes, and I'm very much enjoying it. And you don't agree with me, but do go, Richard. Your turn.
I think you touched on it briefly, Josh, when you said that nothing can kill a film faster than hype.
Oh yeah.
And by the time I saw this, I thought I was the last critic in Australia to see this, but it turns out that was you, David.
No, that was me last night.
Well, Josh and I actually saw it together for the first time. So by the time we got to this film, it had a lot of hype.
The hype was huge. We were terrified because we were just like, if this film isn't good, we're going to be the ones against the grain. And I went in on the hype buzz, like you do, and I was like, I'm probably going to not.
I
like
was
this
so
film.
Worried I was going to hate it as a result of it. I'll just feel. But I was wrong, and I went in and I actually found that this was a film that grabbed me from the first frame.
Mm.
It's a number of things. It is that stylized kind of way of shooting that he does use that he hadn't used, because I'd really recently watched his previous film, which was Valhalla Rising, which is a very almost raw film, and he normally shoots quite raw. Mm. So I found it instantly visually engaging, and the music just sucked me in. The soundtrack, which you'll hear a bit of on the show, is phenomenal.
Well, interestingly enough, I went to a special screening with Popcorn Taxi recently, and they were talking about at the start of it that apparently this film was floated to another company, and they just basically went, yeah, no. And they were sitting in the car, and apparently Ryan Gosling stuck on REO Speedwagon, and apparently Refn just lost his shit, and he was just like, he cried, he laughed and all this sort of stuff, and then he just said, this is the film right here. And it's like, it feels that way. There's that really weird pop sensibility to some sections of the film, but also like everything down to the color scheme and all that. It's kind of pop in
it
a way.
And it draws from a lot of influences too. I mean, one of the films that some critics have written it off for as being a basically taking a 1978 film called The Driver, and just
Ryan
reworking
O'Neill
that.
It's The Driver, isn't it?
I think it's Ryan O'Neill. It's a Walter Hill film.
That's right. Yeah. I saw it a long time ago. So.
And look, you know, I haven't seen it, but I read a summary of it recently, and it sounds similar in that there's a driver. But both films are in turn influenced by one of my favorite directors, Jean-Pierre Melville. Strangely enough, a French director. Who did films like Bob le Flambeur or Bob the Gambler, and more apt for this discussion is Le Samurai, which is a film about a hitman. And now this hitman has served as the archetype for pretty much every hitman since.
Mm.
It was played by Alain Delon, and he. His apartment was just a bare apartment. He slept on the bed. The only possession he had that was his was he had a pet. Other than that, he had the same uniform. It was a trench coat and a hat. And he went out and he had his job. And this was almost like his emotional armor against between him and the rest of the world, and then when he did his job, and that was it. This, you get the same.
You do realize you've also just described the transporter films as well.
The transporter, absolutely.
And you could also go Leon the Professional.
But they all start with Le Samurai in a lot of ways, because this is I can't remember when it came out. I think it was the '60s. It was, and they've all sort of used that model going forward. So. Gosling's character in this, he's a very taciturn character. I think he has about three lines of dialogue in the whole film. Is very much the thing. He's got his uniform as well. He's got this great 80s retro jacket.
Oh, dude. And
with a scorpion on the back. How many of those are going to be turning up at Halloween parties
this
week?
Apparently they're already selling them online for like $169. And they were before the film was even released. So this is what I mean about that concept of iconic. It's like the jacket, the toothpick. Yeah. It's just... He is instantly recognized.
And he offers the kid a toothpick. Toothpick.
Yeah, it's just such an odd thing that, hey, you want to be like me? Here's a toothpick.
And it's the thing is, you said you haven't followed Gosling's career. I have. I've been watching. He was in a film called Half Nelson, was his big breakthrough. Lars and the Real Girl was one of his really really good examples of his acting. And he's sort of completely opposite of the character he plays here. One of the films that really struck me, and I thought was one of the best films last year. Was Blue Valentine, which he starred in opposite Michelle Williams. Another brutal love story, but it just rips your heart out because he plays almost two characters in that film, which you see him in the falling in love and you see him falling out of love.
Oh, yeah.
And it's this film reminded me of that in a lot of ways because he is playing two characters in this. He's playing this very cool... emotionless driver, so the progression of the assassin character. But at the same time, you get little hints that he's about to lose his shit. There's a minor spoiler here. There's one scene where he's in a diner, and this guy comes up to him and says, "Oh, we worked with you on a previous job," and he's like, basically turns around and says, "Dude, if you don't walk out of here
I'm gonna kick your teeth down your throat. And I totally agree with you. Yeah. And what I find interesting is
that sort of signals what happens ultimately in the film. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And it's interesting because like I was saying in the review, one of the things that I loved about his character is that he's walked this incredible line of being in this dangerous kind of deadly sort of a lifestyle, but just due to his nature and the fact that he is so reserved, it's like he's not the guy you would ever remember on a job or something like that. Essentially, he drives, he does his job, he walks away, and he's never been dragged into the other side of it.
The car mechanic at the beginning says, as nondescript as possible.
Yeah.
When he's designing the car. It's like everything about what he does is nondescript as possible.
Exactly, and he has no connection to this until the rest of his life changes. It's like until there is a spark of any kind of passion or emotion, essentially he was always just driving and that was his passion. And it's like, what I love about this film is it's like when the emotions start to kick in is when everything starts to just change in his life and everything sort of starts to kilter off guard. And then all of a sudden, decisions he makes push him into a direction where things just start to go diabolically wrong. But I love his character because I love the fact that he's so good at keeping himself in control. And you always see, like you say, you see lines where he almost loses it. Like my favorite scene is where he's standing, I won't explain the scene, but he's standing with a hammer on a phone and he's done the first half of the scene without emotion and you can just see that the terror is just starting to override and he just starts shaking and the frickin' sweat just starts pouring out of him. And you can just imagine that someone that's steely, it's like it doesn't matter how steely you are, essentially he is doing things that a normal human being would not attempt to try and do. But look, I mean, the film isn't without fault, and I'm not trying to say that, but essentially, like, cult films and films that you really connect to, it's whether or not you can say that you don't find a problem with the film. Like, none of the problems you find with the film override your experience of the film and the rewatchability of the film, and for me, I didn't. So, like I'm saying, favorite film. Dude.
Yeah, absolutely. So I can say, just to add to that, easily one of my favorite films this year. So.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay. Look, you guys are looking at me like I'm going to tear this one apart. I actually like the film. I thought the film was okay.
Fuck you. Oh, no, sorry. No.
I actually thought the film was okay. I thought that... I don't know. How do I start this? I think it is. It's very similar in style, in the sense of pacing and the same similar sort of problems as Hannah. that came out earlier in this year, which it has that kind of dreamy, kind of stylized look to it, and it has a few pacing issues. A lot of people have talked about Refn's use of silence, and they're all saying, isn't this refreshing that he uses silence? Well, the Coens have been doing that for years, and that was actually something that was leveled with Blood Simple way back when, which was that they use silence as well as a lot of people use dialogue. I don't think Refn does use it as well as he uses dialogue.
To be fair, like people have said in later years, like even Coens of later
fair
years.
Enough, but the point I'm trying to make is I don't think that Refn uses it as effectively as other filmmakers have used it in the past. I think he actually draws out too many scenes by trying to have too much meaning, by trying to use too much silence. There are scenes, because it would work if you had one stoic character who doesn't talk much, who takes his time and so forth. The problem with this film is that there are several characters like that. Mm. And so what happens in this film is, in particular, the scenes between Carey Mulligan and him, where she'll ask a question, he'll stare creepily at her with a smile on his face. She'll look at him and stare back creepily at him for a while, and then she'll say something else. And you'll sit there and go, I have a problem with the scene because the fundamental problem I had with this film is I didn't buy their relationship.
The reason why I
didn't buy their relationship is because I didn't buy... Well, I would have bought the relationship had the setup been better. The problem I had with the relationship was that it was all too easy. He did not warrant any trust from her as fast as she gave that trust. Stared at her creepily.
Her husband's in jail. This is someone who...
Exactly, so she's familiar with the creepy kind of weird...
She's desperate for a father figure for her son in her life.
No. And I think creepy is the wrong word for it. Essentially, she's a meek kind of a personality, and that balances. Essentially, the connection between the two of them is the fact that they are both essentially... not forward people. So the moments where they're meeting and the large sections are kind of two people that are emotionally kind of distant and kind of not the kind of person that shows a passion or explosion. Like, as an example...
The problem with that, though, Josh, is that for somebody who's watching it from the outside, it's emotionless. And that's the problem.
I disagree. Yeah, totally. Absolutely.
And I think those long, quiet moments that you talk about, I think they make... The visceral parts all the more powerful.
I agree with certain scenes. I think that some of those scenes where he's driving in the car, where there are moments where he's sitting there working, it all works with him. The problem is that when you put him into a social situation, when you put him into a situation where he has to actually interact with other people, that would work if the other people, like with Albert Brooks hits the screen or when Bryan Cranston hits the scene, they actually talk. And so he just sits back and kind of listens and absorbs what's going on and throws out. And when they make comments, like I think that there's a comment from Albert Brooks at one point where he goes, you don't talk much, you know?
Yeah.
And that makes sense, you know?
Yeah.
But the problem is when you put him into a scene where nobody talks, you sit there going, and get on
but
with
again,
it.
But again,
you know?
I mean, dude, it depends on how you're taking it. Like, as an example, we have a friend of the show, Shane, and we know Shane is a very quiet person now. The way that this guy emotes is exactly the same way Shane does.
Agree.
And the thing is, as someone that's spent time around someone like that, that is the exact way that you can gather emotion
from
him.
That is not my problem. And you've made the exact point for me. If you put three Shanes into a room, that is not a movie you want to watch.
Because three Shanes
in a room are just going to stare at each other and not say anything.
But again, it's in the face. It's in the way they... As an example, with the long scenes with Carey Mulligan, let's put the word creepy aside. When he looks at her and she gives a question and he responds very slowly, as it is, it's the creeping smile on the both of their faces where it's kind of like they're comfortable. They don't need to speak large amounts of words.
It didn't sink in for me.
I don't think these are smiles that either of them have given up easily, either.
But the problem we have is that happened from the minute they met. We didn't get a chance to build up into that.
You've said this before, Dave. I mean, like, you know, film is a compressed format. Things have to happen quickly.
Yeah, Refn's a walking contradiction. Yes, film is a compressed format. The problem is Refn doesn't want to compress his film. So he's basically giving you these long scenes where he's basically saying, we're going to take our time, but he didn't take his time.
But
he just
dove
straight into
it. Sounding as though you didn't like this film.
I actually liked the film. The problem is I loved Albert Brooks. I thought Albert Brooks was fabulous. I love Cranston. I thought Cranston was fabulous. I loved... Ron Perlman. I thought Ron Perlman was fantastic. I love the setups in this film. I love the meticulous nature that he goes about his job. There was one issue with that, which I don't understand why he did that, but and I don't want to give spoilers, but there's a scene with a mask that you might know what I'm talking about, where I just sit there and go, I don't know why he needed that, but, you know, because there were no witnesses anyway. You know what I mean? But so I don't know why he needed the mask. But it looked suitably creepy on film. And I think that, once again, Refn shoots for cool. There is no doubt about that. No, he does.
And it was. I have an answer for that, but I don't want to bring it up on the screen.
Refn shoots for cool. There are a lot of scenes in the film where he's done it because it's a cool-looking thing to surround his action. One example, I was talking to Richard before the show, minor spoiler, which takes place in the back room of a strip joint. And the way that the strippers are all sitting around in like this tableau form with no emotion on their face while that's what's going on, you sit and go, that's actually not realistic, but it looks cool. You know what I mean?
It's funny you bring up that scene because there's a scene that Josh and I think discussed on the day, which was, or we might have discussed since, which was he referenced that this brilliant thing of you've got a room full of naked strippers and the only thing you can't take your eyes off Ryan Gosling.
Absolutely.
And it's, and I think, I
don't know, I looked at a nipple here and there. So there are many great things about this film, but the central relationship I had trouble with.
Yeah,
and I love Carey Mulligan, don't get me wrong, and I love Ryan Gosling. I've been watching Ryan Gosling for a long time. I just didn't buy that central relationship. I think it worked better in the second half of the film when the husband came back into it. And that scene in the hallway where she's sitting outside the party and he comes out and he's talking, that worked. But we needed more build up to that.
I felt, again, I mean, it's a difference in opinion on how you felt the first bit played out, because I felt a sizzling connection between those characters from moment go. And I mean, again, it may just be also how you connect as a person as well, because I mean, like, I don't connect very forwardly. So when I look at scenes like that, a lot of the time that is how emotion starts with me, is essentially a slow buzzing kind of feeling.
With me, it was all, get on with it.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, like, that's a thing. But again, I don't, you're saying it's the problem with the film. And I struggle with that.
I should stress, because once again, everything is subjective. Yeah. It is a problem that I had with the film.
Yeah, no, okay? And that's fine.
It is a problem that I had with this film. I don't, and this is what brings the film down for me a little bit, is because if I can't connect with the characters, I'm not going to be able to take the ride with them, because you need to be able to connect with those characters. I liked Gosling. I thought Gosling did a great job as that laconic, laid back. I love the fact that everything is very calculated with him. I love the fact that he doesn't betray his emotions. He doesn't, he gets the job done. I really like Carey Mulligan. I think there's a sensitivity to her. I've loved her since the day I saw her in Doctor Who. And carried on through her career. I haven't always liked her film choices, but I've always loved her.
I loved her character in this, and it was interesting because I walked out with a friend of mine the second time I watched it, and they brought up they said Carey Mulligan didn't really do much, and I was like, no, I completely disagree, because her character becomes, by the end of it, so incredibly, you know, sort of melancholy, because essentially what she thought was another really good man. Essentially, she's ended up with a very similar situation to her last man, where it's like a man that does right but does wrong decisions has basically just started again. Yeah. And essentially, this is what's happened. It's like she's waiting for one man to come back from prison, gets the man back. She's now got these two people in her life. One goes, and then essentially the other one has now become the same one as the one before. And it's like, it was just an interesting character. And it is... Celine brought it up that she said it's like an old Greek play, and the fact that it's like the tragedies override everything else. And it's really interesting because, I mean, there is, understandably, she brought up a sense of the fact that everything is circling around her. And essentially, she is everything that happens in this film happens because of her. And I just thought that would to be a very interesting...
Which is why I think the connection was so instant, because she somehow pierced through his armor almost immediately.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And there's that...
He wasn't willing to let that in. He'd closed himself off to emotion. As I said before, he literally...
Because the average person would never react to that. No. Like, essentially, the average person, when they see somebody very quietly, usually dismisses them immediately.
I thought his connection with the kid was stronger than his connection with her.
Oh, yeah, and that...
Actually, I agree with you slightly, David, because... and that's why she gave up her trust, because she saw someone who was probably a better father than the previous father had been. That we do get that kind of little everything, hey, ancient great montage kind of thing.
Yeah.
When they're driving back, and you know, that was his little indulgence, the way of getting from point A to point B, really quickly, which was these two are going to be meaningful to each other.
But I loved it, man, because it's also the connection almost does start more with the kid and Ryan Gosling than anything else, because essentially there's that first shot of any major kind of emotion between them, which is when the car's fixed, the emotion shot in the elevator where it's just the kid staring up at him.
Yeah.
And he's just got the massive grin and neither of them will blink. And they have that constant thing throughout the film, which is that, and it's almost like she kind of latches on because of the emotion that starts with the kid. Like, it's almost like both of them are kind of very similar personalities. And I love that. And I mean, I just think this film was full of emotion for me. And that's why I think the second half, I'm willing to let go of some of the violence, which some people aren't. Like, yeah, has been a criticism.
The violence didn't bother me at all. I mean, I've seen a lot of violent films.
I know. So. I know some people who would love this film but hate the violence.
Yeah.
And like, my girlfriend said to me, she said, would I like this film? And I said, yes. But I don't think you'd like sitting through it.
You know, the only scene, for me personally, the only scene that was gratuitously violent was the elevator scene.
Yeah.
Mm. Other than that, the other violence in it didn't actually strike me as being.
But it's shocking, and even in that both audiences I were in, one more particularly than the other, which was the screening that we went to, the reactions from people around you is intense.
And how rare is that? How rare is it to find violence shocking these days?
And I think that's why I think that's why the violence was so interesting for me in this film, because essentially because you've got that weird kind of almost dreamy state, when it happens it's just so ferocious. Like even in the scenes later on in the film where it's a very kind of subtle, very quick death, if you will, essentially it's still very hard to deal with because you just didn't think it was coming. Interesting. There's so much to talk about out of this film, but
we should probably wrap it up.
Yeah.
All right. I'm going to say my opinion on this film is that I like this film. I thought it was a good film. It is worth seeing. You are going to have some trouble finding it. Obviously the distributors even know that this is a film that is not for everybody because I live out here in the suburbs and it is not playing anywhere this side of town. I had to travel all the way into the city to see it. Now, that being said, I had to pay $18 for my ticket to this film, and I'm going to say that I'm not entirely sure I got my money's worth. If I'd paid Ritz money, not a problem.
Yeah, no, that's cool.
You know,
it's cool.
If I'd paid Ritz money, not a problem.
Yeah.
But $18 is stiff for a movie ticket, and I don't think I love the film enough to warrant $18.
I say it's worth $23.
Yeah. Well, you do that. You go spend your money.
I will.
But I do say it is worth seeing. So it is worth going to. So if you can find it out there and you are interested in all this film, I do think it is a film worth seeing. It is going to be a film that will be remembered as a film that marks this year. I don't think it's in my top five films of the year, but it is a film that will mark this year as. Also, I think it's the film that will mark the coming of age of Refn, because he's been basically an indie darling.
Oh,
until
him
now.
And Gosling. I'm sorry, but Gosling on the day this film was released.
Well, Gosling this year with this and Crazy Stupid Love has solidified himself.
I'm completely aware of that, man, but what I'm saying is the day this was released, he was the number one search thing on IMDb, according to their listing. So it's like people saw this and just went, who was that? You know, like, it's that moment. And I'm not saying that he's done a lot of things that will build him up in the same way that you get people like that along the way that will do these amazing performances, but they'll slip through the cracks.
Yeah, he's had a good year this
he's
year.
He's had a good year.
And he's still got Ides of March to come, which which I've heard mixed things about, but he's meant to be quite good in it.
All right, and as far as you two are concerned, I am sure you guys highly recommend
this. I can't... absolutely. Everyone should. Everyone, no, sorry, I take that back. Anyone that can stand violence and enjoys a film that has a languid pace, I strangely enough suggest this to be a during the day watch or a while you're on your own watch, because it's the kind of film that's best to take in when you've got time and you know you've got the rest of your day as well. Apart from that, I think it's fantastic.
Here's a controversial thing for you, and you guys will disagree with this, I know, because you guys both really love this film. But as far as those languidly placed, introspective films are concerned, I got more out of The American.
And
The American.
The George Clooney film.
Yeah, which I didn't particularly like.
Yeah, which I really liked.
Which I didn't dislike.
I'm
wrong. I really like that film. I don't know what I can't remember. What did I say?
No. I connected with Clooney with that film much more than I connected with Ryan Gosling. So
interesting. Yeah.
So that's just kind of put it in perspective for you. Because I like a good, I like a nice language film. I like a film that gets into
absolutely. Yeah. Look, I'm not judging you liking it. Like I said, it's for me the hardest thing has been realizing that people won't think the same way that I do about this film. And essentially, I have spent the entire week dealing with the fact that I need to be able to either back this up or accept that it's not the greatest film. So I have gone over this film twice, and I have attached every possible argument that I have. An argument I have that's interesting for the chat room. I want everybody to try and figure out, and feel free to email us here at Geek Actually if you find an answer. How did he know to go to the strip club? There is no connection in this film or description on why he knew to go to the strip club.
Feedback at filmactually.com.
Exactly. And look, I have found issues with this film, and I still think that is as good as I'm talking it up. So essentially, I'm not worried about the thing. If you have problems with this film, that's fine. Essentially, it is all, as you said at the start, dude, it's all about your own personal opinions.
Absolutely.
I'd also like to add that I did like The American.
Yeah.
But you forgot.
I'd forgotten The American. I got confused with another film for a moment. But yes, I really did like The American.
See, and as an example, in The American, we're not going to get into a huge review of The American, but in The American, I completely bought the relationship between him and the hooker.
Absolutely.
You know what I mean?
The thing is, I may not be the person to ask about long languidly placed scenes because I'm a film wanker. Yeah. and I'm about to say, I watched a movie this year which was a 3-hour Hungarian film which was basically the same scene repeated over and over again, and I thought it was the most brilliant thing I'd ever seen. The movie's called The Turin Horse, if you want to track it down. So I'm not the best person to ask, but I thought this movie was anything but slow. And look, if this wasn't such a strong year for film already, this would probably be the best film of the year. But as it stands, it's probably my top 5 to 10 anyway.
So. Cool. All right. Well, we've taken so long on that review that we're going to have to fly through some of this stuff. So let's fly indeed.
Next.
Piranha 3DD.
Next.
Talk about going from sublime to the ridiculous. Here's Piranha 3DD.
Get ready, because the party has never been hotter.
The most famous lifeguard of all time.
And the guests have never been hungrier.
There's something in the water!
It's double the terror.
Get off of me!
And double the D's.
Bring me my legs.
Piranha 3DD.
You know what I love about that film? You can sum up the trailer in like 30 seconds. It's amazing. It's like, that is the entire film right there. It's like you're going to have bizarreness, you're going to have big boobs, and you're going to have a shitload of violence.
The only thing that worries me about Piranha 3DD is that... No, the only thing, really, realistically, one thing worries me about it, which is that as ridiculous as the first film was, Alexander Aja managed to bring this odd, French, strange sense of humor and sensibility to it, and he's not directing the sequel.
And can I just get this right? We all like the first one.
I love the first one.
I love the first one too.
I think I liked it the least out of everybody that was on the panel, because even Celine, who was not the person I was going to expect, let this one go. She was just like, it got to a point
because it was
where
just strangely stupid fun.
And you know what? I didn't as much.
My season was the same way too.
I still there was still a small part of
me that
was
just like... I've watched it like 4 times.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. And I can see myself rewatching it, but I still was like... it was all right. Like,
I have a fear that Piranha 3DD is going to be absolute crap.
Well, the only reason I asked was because I think the first film worked because it was self-conscious.
Yes.
Mm. And the second film is self-consciously self-conscious, if that makes any sense.
Well, now, and like all sequels, they have to go bigger and bigger and bigger. And so what's happened is they went, oh, the nudity worked, the humor worked, blah, blah, so let's make that bigger.
It's like they've missed what made
the first
it's
essentially the same. They're going about it the same way that we go about modern remakes. And I think that's what everybody's scared of. But at the same time, there is the other part of me that looks at it and goes, they're also, and my other fear for it is that they're also doing things that are like, we have to take characters and make them larger than life. So they're picking people that I'm like, I don't know. Like Ving Rhames' character was supposed to be, he was there, he was helpful, and he's gone. Ving Rhames was awesome, and I hope he's better in this, but they've kind of almost cartoon characterized his character, and that's a problem. And then second of all, Hasselhoff.
Yeah.
Why?
Obvious. Yeah.
Also, I was under the impression, everything I had read leading up to this, I thought Piranha 3DD was set in Thailand.
Maybe it is. Maybe that's the intro.
No, because even Chris Zilka in the interview said, I forget what he said it was, but he said it's a lovely place. It's like, that's not in Thailand.
Mm.
It's like, so have they just completely changed their plans? By the way, Chris Zilka is starring in Piranha 3DD, and he's also one of the young stars of Shark Knight 3D, which is coming out. We have an interview with him up on the site, so go have a look for that, because he was quite fun about the whole thing, because I actually said to him, I said, Piranha, sharks, is there a thing about toothy fish? You know, what is it? What is it about this? He said that he doesn't know what it's going on.
Just quickly, Josh, were you a fan of the Feast films? Have you seen them at all?
Yes and no. I love
same director as all three of those.
Oh, right. So, okay, cool.
Yeah. As was Piranha 2.
Piranha 3DD. Yeah.
Right. Yeah, okay. I think it's funny that you say that, because essentially it's the same thing for me. It's like all of the Feast films and also this have one thing in common for me, which is the fact that by the three-quarter mark, the joke's wearing thin and I just want it to be done. Like, yeah. I'm like... we've had fun with this. Now let's wrap it up with a decent ending. And I always feel a bit towards the end.
Okay, let's skip the Lorax. Let's do Muppets. Yeah. We'll do that in a second. First of all, I just want to talk about this Steven Spielberg article. Steven Spielberg talked about Jurassic Park 4 and Indiana Jones 5. And what I thought was really neat about this was he had a sense of humor. I thought that was really cute. He basically said, this is from Empire. I think he was basically saying that Jurassic Park 4 is still in the writing stage and who knows if it'll ever come, basically. But he did talk about Indiana Jones, and he actually said about Crystal Skull, because they said, if you do another one, you know, what about Crystal Skull? And he said, he goes, I'm very happy with the movie. I always have been. I sympathize with people who didn't like the MacGuffin because I never liked the MacGuffin. George and I had big arguments about the MacGuffin. I didn't want these things to be either aliens or interdimensional beings, but I am loyal to my best friend when he writes a story he believes in, even if I don't believe in it. I'm going to shoot the movie the way George envisioned it. I'll add my own touches. I'll bring my own cast in. I'll shoot the way I want to shoot it, but I always defer to George as the storyteller of the indie series. I will never fight him on that because he always said Indiana Jones films are George's movies. But the thing I thought was really particularly funny was at the end of the article, he says, of the criticisms of the film, Spielberg takes some of them as a badge of pride. He goes, the gopher was good. I have the stand-in one at home. He says, and what people really jumped at was Indy climbing into the refrigerator and getting blown into the sky by an atom bomb blast. Blame me. Don't blame George. That was my silly idea. People stopped saying jump the shark, and now they say nuke the fridge. I'm proud of that. I'm glad I was able to bring that into popular culture.
You know what, dude? And amen to you, because it was not my problem with that film. I didn't give a shit about that. I thought that that was hilarious. I was like, the fact that that could work, 100% not going to happen. The fact that Indy managed to make it work, I'm okay with it.
Look, I have no problem with Indiana Jones climbing into a fridge. I thought the whole scene was kind of stupid. I had no problem with Indy. I had problems with Shia LaBeouf swinging from vine to vine with the monkeys
yeah,
and stuff like that.
That was very George.
That was George. Mm. I thought at least he can kind of have a sense of humor about it. And look, I think it's fair to say that Spielberg, if you look at his filmography, where he fails with something like Crystal Skull, you kind of have to point it at George, because it's not a Spielberg thing to do.
So
I thought that was kind of interesting. The other piece of news that I think we'll just kind of skip around here was, let's talk about this Joss Whedon story very quickly.
Oh, quickly.
Now, Joss Whedon, as we all know, is busy directing the Avengers. And then suddenly, out of nowhere, a website surfaced basically saying, much ado about nothing, principal photography has now finished. And it looks like a modern-day version of much of the Shakespeare play, Much Ado About Nothing, starring Amy Acker, Alexis Denizov. It's Nathan Fillion. Nathan Fillion's in it. Basically, it's all of Whedon's regulars.
People, who've been in Buffy, Angel, Serenity, Dr. Horrible, Dollhouse. They're all
now, we don't know what this film is. We don't know what it was shot on. We don't know when it was shot.
It's come out. There was a press release.
Press release, but it was still kind of airy.
It is going to be a modern adaptation of Shakespeare. It has been shot. It's been finished. What format it comes out in, we're not quite sure. Whether it'll be a feature-length film, I think it's going to be a feature film.
I think it's feature film,
as opposed to, say, a web series, which some people suspected it might have been. It's totally up Whedon's alley, because whether he's written his own dialogue on it or if he's used the original text, that kind of fast-paced stuff is what kind of screwball comedy came out of, and it's what Whedon
The press release goes to point out, Whedon is a huge fan of Shakespeare.
Yeah. And when you look at, I mean, the opening, the two main characters, Beatrice and Benedict, are at each other's throat. This is one of those few Shakespeare films that's only been filmed once for the big screen before.
Yeah, which was the Brown, and it's a great film.
And when the opening dialogue between the two main characters that is clashing immediately, and these are two people we know are going to fall in love ultimately, and the whole thing is Much Ado About Nothing, but when their opening dialogue is Benedict says to Beatrice, "What, my dear lady Disdain, are you yet living?" And she turns around, "Well, is wondering that Disdain should die when she hath such meat food defeated as Senor Benedict." And it goes on like this forever before Benedict ends it with, "I wish my horse had the speed of your tongue and so good a continuer." You know, and it's such a great, and that's, this is all within the space of a minute, this rapid fire stuff, which is very.
If you haven't seen the Branagh film, it is worth seeing, even though it does have Keanu Reeves and.
Little miscast,
Keanu Reeves, and it also has.
Michael Keaton's in it.
Yeah, no, he's great. No, I was actually thinking of Denzel.
Oh, Denzel.
Denzel Washington, who is also miscast.
Yeah.
And the other piece of miscasting in it is, who is an actor who I have grown to absolutely love, who is the star of House at the moment. Not the English guy, not House himself, his friend. Oh, give me a second.
Yeah.
What's his name? He was from Dead Poets Society.
He's got a triple-barreled name, hasn't he?
Yeah, he does. And you know who I'm talking about.
I know. I'm literally staying quiet because I don't know either.
He was the lead kid.
Is it Robert something? No, it's
a lead kid in Dead Poets Society. Patrick. I think his middle name is Patrick.
Robert Sean Leonard.
Robert Sean Leonard. Thank you. Robert Sean Leonard is also, because he's struggling with the accent. And that's the problem, is that these miscast people, because they really are fighting accents and Shakespeare's dialogue. I mean, Keanu Reeves was the man who actually did Hamlet on the Park in New York and actually stopped the production in the middle of the play and looked at the audience and went, "Oh, I forgot my line." So it's like, not the person you want to cast.
This is funny, actually. This is a brief side thing. Huh? What?
Whoa.
Well, it's actually funny because there was a documentary a few years ago called Looking for Richard, which
I
not naturally watched.
Al Pacino film.
Yeah. Al Pacino talking about Shakespeare. Why do people like Shakespeare? You know, and he's talking to like people like Branagh, and he's talking to a whole lot of people. And I think it's actually Branagh who says, Pacino asked the question, "Why do Americans not do Shakespeare as well?" And he said, "It's weird." He said, Branagh said, "The thing I love about American cinema and American acting," and he said, "particularly your acting to Pacino from the 70s, is that there was no self-consciousness to it.
No pretension.
No pretension, that they just acted and it was just out there, whereas the English don't do that sort of acting as well." He said, but with Shakespeare, Americans suddenly get quite self-conscious about what they're saying, as though the language is...
Well, it's a very theatrical language.
And, the heightened language.
Because it's not even English, it's Shakespearean English, you know?
and so that doesn't come across. There are some people who just rolls off their tongue, and it sounds as though they're saying, "I saw a great production of Much Ado this year, an Australian production by Bell Shakespeare, and it had an Australian actor named Toby Schmitz in it," and they were just dropping the lines like they were just tossing it off, you know, a couple of things over there, and that's when it works. So it'll be interesting to see what he comes up with.
Fair enough. Mm. I'm really curious to see this film. The news just dropped this week out of nowhere, and we're kind of going, when? How? You're making a film like The Avengers. You don't have time to scratch your ass. How do you go off and shoot another film while you're doing it? I don't understand. Anyway, so we'll wait and see what that's all about. Let's have a look. This is the final parody trailer for The Muppets. Now, The Muppets have done all these parodies of The Girl with the Dragon Tattoo and so forth. And this was like, the film comes out in like 3 weeks now in America. It comes out Thanksgiving. Mm. So they make a point in this trailer by saying, this is the final one. And it's like, it's been a nice ride. Anyway, have a look at this, because this is actually very funny. I quite like this.
Two Muppets.
Tommy.
Searching for love. One chance to go the distance.
What the?
Kermit the Frog, Miss Piggy, Jason the Seagull, Amy Adams.
Wait, stop. Are there humans in this movie?
Wait, stop. Are we doing a parody of our own parody trailer?
Yeah.
I think we've taken this as far as it will go. Thank you, Internet.
Yeah!
For one heck of a year.
It's very hard, chicken.
We wish we had time for this. This.
Hola.
Check it out. Fart shoes.
Good grief.
And this.
Happy feet. Dancing on happy feet.
Next. And finally this.
It's almost twilight. Time for breaking prawn.
By the way, Pepe is a shrimp or prawn.
You get it, right? Prawn and the don.
This Thanksgiving.
Come on, guys, let's go!
It's time for the real deal. We'll see you. At movie theaters everywhere.
A night out at the movies would be nice.
And then the Muppets had to go and ruin it.
The Muppets. This now completes the parody portion of our advertising. Yeah! Unless you want us to do one more.
No!
All right, fine, we're done.
All right, fine, we're done. I love that.
Yeah, the thing about the trailers, they didn't need to put it out. They just did, and it was fantastic.
Did you hear, though, there was an article today, apparently original Muppet people who worked on the original Muppet show have come out and basically said they're not liking what they're seeing.
Because of the fart jokes?
Because of the fart jokes. They said this is not what we set out to do with the Muppets, and they're actually kind of backing off on it, basically saying, you know, this is not good. So I'm curious to see what this film is. Look,
well, there's
I'm,
one fart joke in there, and it's
I know, I think they're overreacting.
And I think they're making fun of the fart
joke.
They're making fun of fart jokes.
Like, you know. Literally, there was no other point to put that in. That wasn't funny on its own.
No.
It's the reaction afterwards with, like, oh, Jesus
Christ. It's like, you are a has-been. That's right. Yeah. Look, I am dying to see the Muppets. I can't wait. Come on, January for us.
Absolutely.
It's Thanksgiving.
Disney, if you want to do some super early screenings here in Australia.
We're there.
Yep, we'll do it.
We'll do some pre-buzz for you. Not a problem. All right, and just to round off the movie news, we were going to do the Lorax. We'll do that next week. We'll throw it into next week's show, but we couldn't pass up Mission Impossible. Come on. Now, we're actually seeing some early stuff on Mission next week.
We
so,
will, and if we're allowed to, which I think we will be.
I think we'll be allowed to talk about it.
We'll talk about it.
But we will talk more about that next week. So, but let's have a look at this. This got me quite excited. This got me out of bed this morning. So, so here it is, Mission Impossible 4 Ghost Protocol trailer number 2.
Com check. We're live.
Target acquired.
What the hell is that?
Abort.
Ethan, what happened in the Kremlin?
It was a setup.
The Russians are classifying this as an undeclared act of war. The blame points to you and your team. The president has initiated Ghost Protocol. The entire IMF has been disavowed.
So what happens now?
Your mission, should you choose to accept it.
The secretary is dead. The four of us are all that remains of the IMF. No safe house, no support. Or extraction. Everyone connected with this man is an asset with valuable information. We come back with our target. Or we don't come back.
And how do you propose that we do that?
We take him out.
Yeah, we take him out. But, you know, discreetly.
Discreetly. Operation's over before it even begins.
Would you care to explain yourself, Brandt?
Who are you, really?
We all have our secrets. Don't we, Ethan?
Okay, this is a slight wrinkle. We're going to have to go into the server room from the outside.
We?
I'm on the computer.
Just makes me want to watch Mission Impossible movies.
Oh, look, in the words of one of my followers, Insequential on Twitter, now that is how you cut an action trailer.
Yeah, that's and it's better
that's
music.
Like a film in itself right there.
That was just fantastic.
And they made up for their one mistake from the first trailer, which is the not using the theme well. And boy, did they use it well, wasn't
it? Yeah, they really corrected their mistakes. So. All right. That all leads us to a list of five, guys. So sure is, let's... Right? Oh, wait. No. I just thought I'd bring this up very quickly. This is just very quick. This is a really heartwarming thing. This is a really heartwarming thing I thought I would bring up.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Now, Dan Trachtenberg, who was the guy who directed that short film Portal No Escape, which was that really amazing fan film for Portal, has been hired to direct a feature film. Universal now.
Yes, I saw the
story. I thought that was fantastic. So that is one of the most downloaded fan films ever made now. And he immediately got picked up by Universal and is directing a new science fiction film called Crime of the Century. But that was last week. That led on to this week, which was a guy called James Curran, who on a whim made a little animated title sequence for the new Tintin movie, just as a thing to put on YouTube. And it was so good that Steven Spielberg has now offered him a job.
Nice.
Now, we don't know what the job is for, whether it's working on Tintin or what it's for, but Spielberg apparently has offered him a job.
That was an amazing little trailer.
It's an amazing little sequence. Yeah. And if you haven't seen it, the link is in the show notes. Go and have a look at that little animated film, because it is really fantastic little title sequence that it would be crazy not to use, quite frankly.
Yeah.
But, you know, I doubt they'll use it, but he has been offered a job by Spielberg, which I just thought was fantastic.
For the sequel, maybe.
Maybe.
apparently, I should just, as an aside, Peter Jackson will be involved. I think will direct.
He's supposed to direct the second.
If that was announced this week. Yeah.
Well, that was announced at the very beginning.
I think they've
yeah. The very beginning of it was supposed to be Spielberg direct the first one. Jackson was supposed to direct the second one, and they hadn't decided who would take the third reign.
It'll probably be Andy Serkis,
because it's supposed to be it's from the very beginning. It has been pictured as a trilogy. Yeah. So we don't know what's happening with the third one. Oh yeah, Andy Serkis was directing second unit on The Hobbit.
It's possible they'll get him to direct. Yeah.
Okay. This week's list of five is five of our favorite movie vehicles. We're going to move through this pretty fast. We'll cut through this. I don't think there's a lot of explanation. We don't have to justify this. This is just our favorite vehicles. Whether it be a car, plane, or spaceship, the vehicles that our favorite characters drive can be just as much a character as the main star. Here are some of our favorites. Josh, why don't you get us started with number five?
Number five on my list is one of the only car ones on my entire list, which is from Gone in 60 Seconds, Eleanor. Which was
Look,
I have been, ever since that film, I have been obsessed with any car that looks anything like that, and the very concept of just little things like the way that car was put together. It was just a thing of beauty, whether you liked cars or not, and you know, like, people can argue with me over that. But, you know, it was one of those things where I think every person that was male or can understand cars kind of sat there and went, yeah, that's nice. And like, the thing is, the car itself had so much personality as well, which is why it's on the list. You know, randomly stopping at times when it should probably be still going, but putting in the hard yards when it does. Like you said, it is exactly that. It is as much of a character as the people in the character, and probably a better actor than some of them. There, I said it. Ha! Moving along.
Well, I think it's got more personality than Nicolas Cage, quite frankly.
I wasn't getting into specifics. If you want to, you
Richard, what's your number five?
It's the 1963 Aston Martin DB5 from Goldfinger.
Oh, and you know what? Now that you actually bring up James Bond, there is a James Bond car that I wanted to put on there, and I forgot.
There's another James Bond car that almost made it on here, because, like Josh, I was obsessed with this car for a short period of time. It was the Z3 Roadster that was in GoldenEye. Mm.
So the one that didn't make my list, that would have made my list if I had I remembered it, was the Lotus Esprit from The Spy Who Loved Me.
Right, But the DB Martin the Aston Martin DB5 was where it kind of started for the James Bond cars, because before that there weren't really a lot of gadgets in the James Bond movies either, so that was kind of what kicked it off. So it's the first, and I think still the best.
I just love the Lotus because it turns into a freaking submarine.
Well, there's that. Yeah.
All right, my number five is the Millennium Falcon from Star Wars.
Doesn't look like much, but she's got it where it counts.
Absolutely. I think it's probably the most iconic of all the spaceships from the Star Wars universe. And come on, it's got character. It keeps breaking down.
Absolutely. it's a good little one. Are we looking back at me now?
Yes, number four.
My number four is Serenity, the Firefly.
Almost made my list.
And you know what? Again, it's for that concept of personality. It's like, with all the giant, awesome spaceships that you do see over the course of both the series and the film, just space stations and all these sort of things, it's like, It's this weird little bug-like creation that has a giant engine on the back of it and, again, constantly breaks down. It's like that was a character, you know, as much as anything else. And as the movie starts, it's like literally breaking down right then and there.
Absolutely.
it's a great little ship.
And the fact that Kaylee can actually have a relationship with the ship's engine.
Mm,
and it's believable. You sit there and go, that's fine. Yeah, it's great.
Mm.
Yeah, Serenity is as much of a character as any member of the crew.
Yeah.
You're number four.
My number four is Herbie the Love Bug.
Yeah, it didn't make my list, but I can understand why.
Yeah. For all the same reasons, it breaks down when it shouldn't. And it's,
absolutely.
And it's got the most personality of any car. It got a little silly towards the end, but they're certainly in the first film. Yeah. It was great. Dean Jones, yeah.
Fair enough. My number four is, my list has just turned off. Hold on. My number four is The Killdozer from Army of Darkness.
Yeah.
Oh, right.
Yeah.
Where they took Ash's car and put the blades on it and the fire breathing and the...
Groovy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, dude, I hadn't even thought about that. I don't class that as a vehicle. I think that's why.
It's a vehicle. I know. It was a lot of fun. I love it. And that car, by the way, that pale blue... What is it? A pale blue...
Oh, it's an Oldsmobile, isn't
it? Oldsmobile something is in every Sam Raimi film that he's ever made.
Yeah.
Somewhere it is in there.
Mm.
It's Uncle Ben's car in Spider-Man, for those who want to know. So.
Yeah.
You're number three.
My number three is bizarre because technically this one isn't quite as emotionally attachment. It just came out of nowhere and I was like, that is how you build a zombie killing fucking machine. It's from the New Dawn of the Dead where they build this truck. And there's this weird montage. And again, it's that point of the movie where the film kind of starts to lose me a little bit. But it's just like, it's got barbed wire on it. They've got shotgun holes. It's got a whole sliding bit where you can run chainsaws up. I was just like... I don't know what you guys were thinking when you made this in the film, but you know what? It works. And it works well for them right up until the second that they drop it. So, yeah, just saying. Awesome vehicle.
Fair enough. You're number three.
My number three is a 1974 Dodge Monaco. And why? Because it's got a cop motor, a cop tires, cop suspension. Cop shocks. It's got a 440 cubic inch V8. It's made before catalytic converters, so it runs good. On regular gasoline. It is the Bluesmobile from the Blues Brothers.
Fix a cigarette lighter.
Well played out, you guys. Well
okay. My number three is the Batmobile. Which one? The 1966 Cadillac.
Oh, yes.
From the movie, which I have actually touched.
I got a caddy on my list, too.
Which I have.
You said the thing from the movie from 1966?
The 1966 movie, which was based on the TV series. The Adam West TV series spawned one feature film, which is the one that basically put them all in it. But that car was the mainstay of them all. And that, to me, is the Batmobile.
Yeah.
That car is amazing. I actually went to a car show in the 70s when I was a child, and they had that car on display.
Yeah.
And I went up to it, and the thing that I never realized about that car is that when you actually touch the surface of it, it's furry.
Wow.
The paint that they've used is actually velvety.
Wow. Mm.
So when you can actually run your hand across it, and it's got this weird texture to it where it feels like you could sit there and pet this car.
It's amazing.
It is an amazing looking car on film. It's an amazing looking car in person, let me tell you.
Yeah.
That is my favorite. For me, that is the Batmobile. Forget what Tim Burton did. The Tumbler was kind of cool, but that's the Batmobile.
Oh, yeah.
Your number two.
My number two is Tron's Light Cycles.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
There's just something about them, man. It's just... Like, I mean, back in the day, they looked kind of cool when they brought them out in the modern era, and they showed us in Tron 2 what they could really look like if you gave them a CG paint job over the top. I would love to ride around on one of those things.
Hell yeah.
I would actually be totally comfortable with
it. And I'd say a close second is Tron Legacy's light cycles, too. They're pretty cool, too. So.
Oh, no, that's what I mean.
Yeah.
Tron Legacy.
Just the whole
light cycle. Tron Legacy.
The concept of light cycles.
Yeah.
The concept of this vehicle with nothing in
Absolutely.
The middle. Just something that looks completely different to cars.
Mm.
Something that's eye-catching. There's something about that design that's
always... And
I love
the way they move.
Exactly.
That's the real thing, is the way they move.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
It's so cool. You're number two.
My number two is a 1959 Cadillac Ambulance, also known as Ecto-1.
It's in my almost rants.
Yeah, it's the Ghostbusters car, basically.
Yeah, it's fantastic.
It's also needed a lot of work.
Needs new shocks.
Both my three and two were driven by Dan Aykroyd.
My number two is a helicopter. It would be Blue Thunder from the film Blue Thunder, starring Roy Scheider. I love that helicopter. Everyone, I saw the movie in 1983. I remember sitting there going, that is the most badass helicopter I've ever seen in my life. And to this day, even though the film is a little dated and everything else, I still like the film, but it is a little dated. That helicopter is still badass. And you just look at that thing and you go, you can see all the modern helicopters of today, like your Black Hawks and everything, and your Cobras, and stuff, you can see them all. Little bits of those are in Blue Thunder. Everything about that helicopter was bad, man. I loved it. All right, so here we go. Number one.
I don't know what your number one's going to be, by the way. I'm just calling
you
it.
Know.
Everyone, I know what your number one is going to be, and the chat room has been saying something. All I can think is with the chat room, just wait.
Yeah, everyone knows what my number one is going
to
be.
Exactly. Like, I just wanted to precursor that to say we're all already aware of what your number one is. Yeah, we all know. My number one is a very...
Actually, I got to tell you, I love that vehicle, too, and the reason it's not on my list is because I know.
We both knew. It was going to be on this, Anyway, my number one's really left field. And funnily enough, I should have added this into the watch you've been watching because I did watch it this week. And I think it is, and I'm going to say this out loud because I have to, this is one of the most bizarrely missed horror films ever. Like, I just don't know. I look at this film and I go, there is nothing wrong with this film. It is fucking amazing. But my number one is Jeepers Creepers, and I'm just naming it the Creepermobile. Because this bizarre truck that seems to have, like, nitrous and, like, a massive fuel injection system.
I actually love Jeepers Creepers.
Exactly. Oh, no. And I know there are a lot of people that like it, but it's just... It's just Justin Long. And the relationship between the two of them and the creepy goddamn house and the basement and the you know, the places they take it, and then the fact that you can never figure
out. I never watched the sequel.
Yeah, I did. Not quite so good, but still worth a view every now and then. But on top of that, that machine is terrifying. The few scenes that you see that thing driving down the road, and when it's following them, that horn, that creepy front to it, the fact that it looks somewhere between a Hearst and like an old 1930s, 1940s pickup truck or something, it's just, it's instantly memorable, and I'll always remember that vehicle. And then the sounds it gives off always give me goosebumps. And then the fact that it's just so fast for something that shouldn't be fast, I don't know, just memorable.
Fantastic. All right, Richard. Okay, we know what yours is.
Yeah. Do you want to do yours first?
No, go for it.
Mine's the DMC-12.
Fucking A.
Made by the DeLorean Motor Company, also known as the DeLorean.
Yeah.
The reason I chose this is because its stainless steel structure made the flux disperse. Sorry. Look, it's Back to the Future. Everyone knows that Back to the Future will have to. I hope this doesn't vault Back to the Future, because I'll be mentioning this every week as long as I can.
We've got to be close.
Have to be very close to vaulting.
Don't worry, Michael.
I couldn't
do. Reminder when it comes.
I mean, look, none of your. I don't know what your number one is, David, but none of your cars travel through time.
Mine flies.
Wow. Yours flies. Mine flies too.
Yeah, it's true.
Until it got struck by lightning, and then of course it ran out of gas. Although I do have a problem, because technically there should be a second DeLorean in the third film floating around there. There'd be the DeLorean that Doc came back in time in, and then there was the one, and then he left that in a mine shaft for Marty to pick up in 1955. Marty came back in time in that DeLorean.
Spoilers.
For films of 20 years, Marty came back in time in that car. So technically, at one point, there should be two DeLoreans. While they couldn't just siphon the gas out of the original DeLorean because they were struggling to find gas in the third one, I will never know. But it's those wibbly wobbly timey wimey bits.
Although, you know, for all the confusion of time paradoxes and everything else, they managed to cover most bases.
They did cover most. That's the one that still.
Yeah. Unless they were just at that crossover point. Where one left.
Oh,
and one,
yeah, absolutely.
It might have just been right at that.
No, but it was
point.
Sitting stationary in a mine shaft for 70 years. It didn't go anywhere.
Yeah. Yes, but you don't know what time he.
Doc was already there, so
the car had to be there.
The car had to be there.
Well, maybe you just
no. Fuck you.
No, actually, this is an interesting point, because if they'd siphoned the gas off when they got there, when he found the car 70 years later, the car wouldn't have had any gas in it.
Oh, paradox! Absolutely. There you go. He had to leave it as it was.
That's
in
right.
The mine
that's
shot.
How, you know.
There you
and
go.
Also,
answer.
And also, if they moved it, it wouldn't have been there.
That's right.
If they moved the car from its original point of view, he wouldn't have found it in the future.
Okay,
therefore,
that's thank you. You've explained that.
No, so worries, you couldn't touch it.
Wow, that has annoyed me for like since 1991.
Well, there you go.
Wow.
So if you'd moved it, he would never have found it.
Three
that's
film
right
nerds in a room at the same time. You fix problems.
Thank you
like
all.
This.
Geeks. All right, my number one is Gaff's spinner from Blade Runner.
Oh, that was so close.
I love the spinners in Blade Runner. I think they are the most awesome things in the world when they just come floating around. Move on.
Yeah.
I just think that the shots of them flying across the cityscape, from them taking off on the street to the high shots of them flying through the buildings, this is like the dream.
With the soundtrack.
But you got to have Vangelis
playing. Which I've been pretty much replicating for the entire last week because of you. Finding every key that sounds like it's wow. Oh, yep, that's Stan. Yep.
See, what you have to do is if you have a spinner, you have to have a Vangelis soundtrack that plays it.
Anyway,
look, flying cars are the great big dream, and I think the spinners just embody that. They just look fantastic.
Oh, absolutely.
So that is my number one. I do have some also-rans, which we'll bring up really quickly, very quickly. I had Ecto-1 from Ghostbusters. I had the DeLorean from Back to the Future. The AT-ATs from The Empire Strikes Back.
Yeah?
They're an awesome vehicle. I also had Firefox from the movie Firefox.
Yeah.
Here we go. We're going to have a live soundtrack by Richard. You got to put the speaker up right to the mic.
If you guys haven't got this application yet, Moog, it's definitely worth getting.
Yeah, it was my pick last week.
Price?
I may have by now. I don't know.
It's still 99 cents.
If you
want
to know more about it, make sure that you go to last
I have
week's
one
show
more almost ran that almost made the list.
Yeah.
And I have to bring this up because it was actually dramatic. It was actually one of the first. It was actually one of the first cars I thought of, and then other cars knocked it off the list. But one of the first cars I thought of was the Duke's Caddy from Escape from New York with the chandeliers hanging on the front and the whole bit. And I thought, that is a badass car. But it just got kicked off the list. So I have to bring that up. All right, that's it. You got any almost-rans? You always have
Most of my almost-rans were mentioned. I think Millennium Falcon was one of my almost-rans and the light cycles.
Right, well, there you go. Yeah. All right. Well, let's wrap this puppy up. Let's put a bow on this thing and wrap it up. Oh, we got some feedback.
Sorry, what were you saying?
We are actually on time, so we will do some feedback. Can you put the Moog away now, please? We have some feedback. We'll just do this very quickly. Tristan wanted us to know about casting for RoboCop and has basically said, hi, guys. Lately on TV, there have been advertising that they're going to be showing that god-awful, terrible movie RoboCop 3. I decided I would just check out some info on RoboCop as the original was one of my favorite movies. As a kid, I used to watch it over and over again. I discovered while checking out that there may be a possible remake. We knew that already.
Yeah.
It looks like Michael Fassbender, Magneto from X-Men or from X-Men First Class, might be in the forerunning for RoboCop at this point.
I am okay with that.
I'm okay with that too. So thank you very much.
You know,
I like Michael
really
Fassbender.
Over that.
Sandy from St. Louis. St. Louis? St. Louis? How do you say it nowadays?
I think it's St. Louis. But,
St. Louis. Says, hey, guys. He says, hey guys, I finally got a chance to see the new The Thing this past week, and I loved it. Like you guys, I'm glad that they had the final sequence during the credits. If they had just ended it with the go to black, I would have been disappointed.
Absolutely.
After watching the new movie, I immediately went home and watched the original, and I was amazed at how well the two movies synced up with each other. My question, and actually when I read this, it actually lowered the prequel in my, and I think Richard and I have talked about this already. Mm. My question, though, was anyone else watching the original and looking at the guy's earrings? Because the prequel now set in motion this idea that if they have earrings or fillings, they're human, right?
Yeah.
Mm. All right, here we go. Also, as a fact, it is also, this fact, if it holds true to the original, means that the ending was a little less mysterious. Mm. So, spoilers for the original thing, okay? Yeah. Which has one of the greatest endings of a film ever, in my opinion, with Giles and Kurt Russell basically sitting there and Kurt Russell saying, let's just sit a while and see what happens, not knowing if either of them was the thing, right? Yeah. However, it says, and this is something I have to go back and rewatch, but it lowers the prequel in my mind if this is true, because it destroys or hurts an ending that I love so much. Basically saying, in the original ending, we know that MacReady is human. Well, kind of. That's because we've been following MacReady, so we assume MacReady is human. And after seeing the earring, we now know that Childs is human too.
What's wrong with that?
Childs has an ear. Because we don't know if Childs is the thing. He disappears for so long. And that's what that whole ending is about, is the fact that he just sits there with that bottle of whiskey and says, he says, let's just sit a while and see what happens, because we don't know if Childs is a thing or not.
Will you help me out with my Back to the Future
dilemma?
But
they haven't come to the point in their mind, and you don't know that. Plus,
no, but as an audience, we now know, because of the rules set down by the prequel.
I don't think we do.
I think we do, because it's the rules set down in the prequel, which only happened literally days before. They're saying that if he's wearing the earring, he's human.
No, but the earring thing in the prequel. This is you help me out on Back to the Future, so I'll help you out on this one.
Yeah.
The prequel states that the thing couldn't replicate non-material matter, so it didn't wearing. So we didn't know that, and as Josh pointed out in his review for it, the creature clearly has learnt stuff from the first film to the second film. If you want to explain this away and still keep the mystery there for yourself, he has learnt to pick up an earring and stick it in his ear.
I think it's reaching.
I think it's also reaching to notice that fine level of detail after having watched.
No, because they make a point of making you notice that fine level of detail in the prequel.
I would like to say, I've got the instant defeat for your whole concept.
Yep.
Essentially, we know that it can't create metallic things, right? But we don't know whether the clothing is. So, what's stopping him from finishing the thing, picking up the clothes and putting it on?
Exactly.
So what would be the difference between putting
that's
an earring
on? That's what he just said. He puts the earring on.
No, but yeah. I'm saying the other guy that's like half transformed, he's got the clothes on. He's just got the fucked up arm, and that's the way that they know that it's not him. So we don't know whether the stuff that's on him he picks up and puts on, or whether he just replicates it physically. I'm saying that, you know, putting an earring in is
it's not that hard.
You know? Putting a clothes on.
Been in a station for a day, where they've been saying, oh, well, we know you're not human, you're not wearing an earring.
Yeah.
You know, he said, well, maybe I better wear earrings this time. You know?
I better accessorize, I guess.
I think you guys are making excuses.
I think you're reaching. I think that looking that far into it is reaching, and if we're going to reach that far, then there's no reason I can't reach further.
I think if you're going to take the prequel as canon, then they have essentially... like people say, oh, that movie destroys the rest of the film. That movie damages the original film.
David, I'm giving you a reason to be able to take that as canon.
I can't do it.
And ignore
then,
that ending.
Then the only thing standing in your way is your own ability to not take the
Thank you, Sandy, for your email.
Remember the last time he didn't listen to me? And we were like, you know, we were trapped in that dungeon for days. With like the red balls.
All right, we're running over. Let's move on. Thank you, Sandy, for your email. Fantastic. Now, this is from Chris from Bris Vegas, who's in our chat room right now. Yep. Says, hi, Dave, Josh,
hi,
and Richard.
Chris.
Caught your brief discussion. Cut your brief discussion in relation to Australian films. Dave, for the most part, I agree. That's that I don't like a lot of Australian films. Australian films don't do much for me either, but there are a few incredible gems out there. Lantana stands above all other Australian films and is a superb example of slow burn thriller drama. Other Australian films that stand proudly amongst the mess of drag queens and men in tights ballroom dancing, Baz Luhrmann, fuck off and never make a film again, please.
Just had an anniversary screening.
Include, and he has a list. Before I go on to the list, I will have to say I hated, I'm one of the few people I know, I hated Lantana. I thought Lantana was boring.
Well, you don't seem to like slow moving.
No, I have no problem with slow moving as long as there is an emotional connection. There's no emotional connection with
Lantana. I didn't like Lantana.
I hated Lantana.
I'll go out there and say
that. In fact, nobody in my house or family like Lantana. I've yet to meet somebody who would openly say, I love Lantana, yet everybody seems to love Lantana. So it's like, you know what it is? It's the McDonald's.
It's the McDonald's syndrome.
Yeah. Everybody says, oh, McDonald's is crap. We never eat McDonald's. Yet everybody must be eating McDonald's because they're the number one restaurant in the world. So somebody has to be eating McDonald's. You know what I mean? And yet nobody admits to eating McDonald's. So anyway, his list is very good, though. The Interview. I loved The Interview. So yeah, I give him that. Kiss or Kill, I still haven't seen. Chopper, fantastic film. Love Chopper. Two Hands, loved Two Hands. The Boys, I haven't seen. The Square, love The Square. I thought The Square was great. So yes, you have some points. There are some good films. Problem is that with Australian films, it's far and few between. That's the problem I have.
It was an interesting point because this week, I think it was Screen Australia announced that it's not going to be funding so much the auteur-driven Here we go. The Screen Australia chair, Glenn Borum, actually said it shifted Australia's focus away from auteur-focused expression films to more audience-driven content over the last few years. But they said they've done that over the past 3 years, and I think that is actually reflected. If you haven't been to an Australian film in a while, you've missed out on a few gems, because this year we've had things like Red Dog, which is possibly, to me, one of the best films of the year.
And Burning Man for me.
Burning Man, which I'm seeing this week. Yeah. There have been some good ones, and like I know you guys don't like The Loved Ones, but for me it was a step in the right direction. So
I give The Loved Ones one thing, which is at least they were trying to make cinema. They weren't doing kitchen sink drama. I just hated the execution of that film.
And we're talking, we've Happy Feet is technically.
Actually, I'd like that film to have been executed. Yeah. That would have been even better.
Exactly. Happy Feet is an Australian film.
Absolutely.
If you want to go there. I'm just looking at some of the ones coming up in the next couple of years. There's the Sapphires film, which is a musical. There's the Kath and Kim film,
which is
going to come out. You know, there's things like that. And I think we've had a really good couple of years. And I think the fact that there is, starting next year on Cockatoo Island in Sydney, a three-day festival of Australian film is indicative that we've come a long way.
I think we should be watching all the exploitation stuff from the 70s and
80s. Absolutely.
That's the best stuff. Chris from Bris Vegas
Turkey
also... was wondering whether we had any plans to review Melancholia.
We will when it comes out on Boxing Day.
Yes, we will review Melancholia. We are in the process, and you know how I am about Lars von Trier, so, you know.
We are taking a long time to get this. It was released in the US on video on demand, I believe.
Yeah, he said he actually got it on his US iTunes account.
But we don't get it. We're only getting it released theatrically in Australia on Boxing Day, which is December 26th.
Now, I will just paraphrase his email very quickly. He says, it's beautifully shot, well acted, and damn fine attempt at a film that is kind of about the end of the world and kind of not, and all without trucks exploding and CG planes hitting CG buildings. I highly recommend you check it out. It's the best film of the year.
I have seen it, and I agree.
All right, so I will. We will be reviewing that on its release, so stay tuned, okay?
In fact, when we get to that point, my best film of the year may shift slightly. Yeah.
And I have to, sorry about the amount of emails, but we didn't do email last week. If you remember, we ran really over and we have a little bit of time up our sleeves here. That's why I'm doing it. Last one, promise. This is from our friend Mike from Canada, who also keeps our list up to date. And he says, hey, Richie, Rich and Joshua, shitty nickname. What? I don't even understand what that means. But it's not
I think he meant that he couldn't come up with a nickname.
Oh, okay, good.
And if he didn't, well, you couldn't come up with a nickname, so...
Now, you will point out that my name isn't on this list, right? Got to check out Contagion months ago, and the guys behind me summed up his experience as, what a waste of time, nothing happened. My town is full of idiots. And then he says to Dave, now, I should explain, because in case people have forgotten, if you remember, I read an email where I corrected his spelling for the name of your website, if you remember.
Right. Yeah.
He says to Dave, oh, I'm sorry, Dave, that I spelt someone's website wrong. I'm so sorry I offended your sense of being. Oh, look at me. I'm Dave and I have a spell check. Real bits is spelt with a Z and not an S. If you couldn't tell, I was being sarcastic. Spell check that, bitches. Mike from Canada.
Doesn't make any sense.
No, I think you're ranting a bit on that one, Mike. But I apologize if I upset you. I was just making sure that...
I don't think you can upset
I was
Mike.
Just making sure that people could actually get to your website.
Look, I don't care anymore.
And that's
this
it
has
for
all
emails.
Become far too traumatic for Richard here. So let's just move on.
If you want to send feedback, send your emails to feedback@filmactually.com or you can leave us a voicemail... 02-8011-3167. We'd like to hear your voices. So leave us a voicemail. It's fantastic. Now, what are we saying? Agree or disagree with us? Anything. Just send that email in. Okay? We love to hear your opinions. Okay. Get your merchandise. Join the fan page. Follow us on Twitter. Follow our Tumblr accounts. Go to geekactually.com. There's a huge follow us button and you'll find everything you need there. And if you do like us and you like what we do, make sure you leave us some feedback on iTunes. It would be really, really helpful. And while you're at iTunes, go check out our other show, Geek Actually, where we talk about geeky stuff.
Yeah.
So, and that's kind of fun too. Just search for that on iTunes or Stitcher Radio. It's on there as well. Or you can find all back episodes at geekactually.com. Josh, where can we find out more about you?
RodioC.com is a gaming website. Go over and check it out. There's a whole bunch of new content coming up over the weekend and then next week and then after that as well, I'm sure. And then, of course, hiphopnetonline.com if you are into hip-hop and just want a few sentences a day just to tell you about new stuff that's coming out that's worthwhile.
Fantastic. And Richard, where can we find out more about you?
Well, as Mike from Canada pointed out, it's at therealbits.com, which is R-E-E-L bits with
Zed.
An S. .com. And there's also, you can find me perpetually, except right now because I'm talking, on Twitter at DVDBits.
Because he's a machine.
Machine. Sorry? So actually, Twitter is open on my computer right now.
So there you go.
He is on Twitter all the time. Yeah, all the time.
And you
all
have your phone in your hand as well.
That's true. Yeah. It's not the only thing I've got in my hand, Josh. Am I right?
That's what
Am
she
I
said.
Right?
Put your hand down afterwards. Huh? Afterwards. You put your hand down afterwards.
Yeah, it's too late. Sorry. You're on video, dude. All right. You can also check out some of our friends. You can also check out some of our friends, Charlie and Brad, over at reboundradio.com. They do a couple of podcasts over there, but two I like in particular are Good Day Sir and Movie Matchup, which I think is a lot of fun. And I love the fact that they also have a Movie Matchup Pretension, where Brad comes into it and they do pretentious foreign language films and stuff like that. So nice. I think that's wonderful. I think the fact that they can do that. Also check out The Real Junkies, R-E-E-L, like The Real Bits.
Yes.
R-E-E-L, Junkies.
Junkies, for not with a Z, though.
Not with a Z. Find them at weekendronin.com or search for them on iTunes. They review movies as well, just like us, but they like to drink while they do it. Although it sounds to me like some of them might want to stop drinking. okay, so check them out. Also, we want to throw a big thank you out to Josh Spencer over at attackninja.blogspot.com for his wonderful cartoon work on our cover art. And as I said at the beginning of the show, our opening clip was from Police Academy, and we are going to close the show with a track from the Drive soundtrack. Now, in the show notes, it's wrong because I changed my mind at the last minute and hadn't updated. The track is actually called Bride of Deluxe, and it's by Cliff Martinez. So we will use that track instead of the one I said. That's it. That's the show. Guys got anything?
Done.
No, I'm hungry.
In that case, go see more movies. You don't see enough movies, and all of life's questions are answered in the movies. And we'll see you all next week. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.
Hey, I hope you enjoyed the show. And just a reminder that if you enjoyed Film Actually, you might also enjoy our geek podcast called Geek Actually, which you can also find on iTunes or at geekactually.com. It's our weekly nonsense podcast where we talk about tech and geek and fun things and food and just about everything else that we can think of. We have a lot of fun doing it, and we hope you come along and join us. You can also watch that live at geekactually.com/live.